Hello, everyone. Welcome once more to the Bible Prophecy Masterclass, show number 18. We have been randomly discussing various themes relative to, or taken from, the book of the Revelation of Jesus Christ. In today's episode, number 36 in our series of studies from John's Revelation, the beast and his kingdom having been fractured, seriously and irretrievably handicapped, and he having reassembled a significant portion of his kingdom, with which he has emerged victorious over the kings of the east and their armies, God will now proceed to once again rattle the nerves and sensibilities of lost mankind per Revelation 16:17 through 21 and Luke 21 verses 25 through 32, prior to the final phase of the Battle of Armageddon. As was true in our previous lesson, and as will be the case throughout the duration of this study, the text will be Judgment Day, Volume 3, Armageddon Acts of God versus Gods of Earth. The book is written by Mr. Alvin Mitchell. I am Michael. I will be your host and narrator. I ask that you will continue to pray with me, if you would please, that God will, in full accord with his promise, add a blessing to this and every study of his word. And with that, we come now to a study of the events associated with the outpouring of bowl number 7. Verse 17, And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven, from the throne, saying, It is done. Several significant things happen when the seventh angel pours out his bowl into the air, the last containing the wrath of God, verses 17 through 21. 1. Voices. 2. A great earthquake that culminates in the two-way division of the great city, i.e., Jerusalem. 2b. Destruction of the capital cities of the nations. 2c. Great Babylon destroyed, Rome, at last, Su-D, the decimation of all the island nations and the toppling of the mountains, and 3, a great hailstorm. When the rumble of this globe-spanning catastrophic shake, rattle, and roll finally subsides, the beast will be absent his home in the west, and any remaining segment of the 200 million army that came from the island nations also have no home to which to return, assuming that might be possible. Voices. Verse 18. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake, and so great. The first of the occurrences following the seventh bowl is a great voice out of the temple in heaven, more specifically, from the throne, which means the voice is that of the Almighty, especially compelling, given that up till now no one else could enter the temple. Interesting, there will be no physical temple throughout all eternity. See 15:8. Declaring the certainty of the successful conclusion of the apocalypse, although the final battle has yet to be fought. It has happened. It is done. It is finished, the voice states most emphatically, in no uncertain terms. The voice was accompanied and/or punctuated by more voices, supplemented by thunder and lightning. A great earthquake. Luke 21:25 through 27. For this is what Yahweh, the eternal, self-existing one, of armies and warfare says, Yet once, in a little while, and I will shake the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the dry land, and I will shake the nations, following which time, the desire of nations, peace, will come, and I will fill this house with glory, Yahweh says, Haggai 2:6-7. Verse 18b, And there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth. so mighty an earthquake, and so great. John's focus is shifted back to the earth, with the sight of a great earthquake following the thunders and lightning. This quake will be like none mankind has ever known. The big one that everyone is bracing for, it will be the mother of all quakes. It will be the greatest ever insofar as the entire world will be shaken. There have been a number of major earthquakes lately, as of 11/11/2006, in Pakistan, Turkey, and Japan. Each of them has left us a sobering reminder of just how devastating quakes can be. How much more so are they when weaponized and targeted in the hands of our angry God and Creator? Perhaps the most catastrophic and revealing of all to date, however, was the silent one centered south off Sri Lanka in December 2004, deep under the ocean. Though no one heard, and there was no direct damage anywhere on dry land, it caused significant collateral damage by generating powerful oceanic undercurrents, moving at speeds up to 500 miles per hour, that triggered the killer tsunami, having waves that traveled to shores across 3,000 miles, causing much destruction and chaos, leaving more than 250,000 souls dead in its wake. Truly, nature in the hands of an angry God will once more be an awesome weapon. Consider the ancient Egyptians and the soon-to-be case of the Russia-Arab-EU coalition when they too become casualties of God's judgment. Moreover, interestingly, no one living today in earthquake-prone areas close to large bodies of water looks for an actual quake, except as he also anticipates the possibility of tidal waves and tsunamis as well, whether or not they actually occur. Thus, one can well imagine the horrifying, deadly, and destructive monster waves that will be generated when God triggers this, which will be the mother of all earthquakes. Rock slides, mudslides, avalanches of snow and ice, all of these will be triggered by this nerve-wracking, psychologically debilitating great quake. Many of these will splash thunderously into large bodies of water, thereby disastrously augmenting already incalculable destruction and carnage on the lakes and oceans themselves, and for miles inland. They will cause more mammoth tidal waves, in addition to, and as great, if not greater than those generated by massive quaking under the oceans and great lakes all around the world. All airports, seacoast lines, seaports, and lakefronts will be totally destroyed. Most bridges on important roads will be knocked out. Many major roads will be rendered practically impassable. With everything around and known to man engulfed in a hellacious shake and rumble, on dry land, on and under the oceans, and in light of the damage and devastation wrought by the above-mentioned tsunami, by America's Katrina, the Pakistani and Turkish earthquakes of late, one can readily envision the trauma and stress this drama will create in the hearts and minds of these, the most rebel of eternally lost end times men. As they observe indicators relative to the positioning of the sun, moon, and stars, psyches battered and tender nerves, already worn to the bone, one can almost witness Jesus' description of these men's reactions at the precise moment, as recorded by Matthew and Luke, when the hands of this monster quake will grip an entire globe in a merciless jangle. The nations of the earth will be stressed out, distressed, perplexed to the nth degree, or confused, disoriented with no way out, no hope of a solution, as they watch the seas, all of which then will have the consistency and likeness of a dead man's blood. Everything in them will be dead, churning and their waves roaring, men's hearts will fail them out of fear and anxiety as they consider all that is happening, having no idea the outcome or when it will ever end, because even the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Luke 21:25-27. The great city divided. Verse 19a, and the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. The magnitude of this earthquake will be so great and so far-reaching that the great city will be divided into three parts, while the cities of the world will be leveled. Remembering that context is the final arbiter in terms of how a word or expression is to be defined in God's prophetic utterances. By great city, one need not assume as but that John means Jerusalem, where our Lord was crucified, see 11:8, as opposed to that great city, which caused the nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, see 14:8. Herein lies a thing most curious, does it not? It has been God's sovereign desire for millennia to see and bring the Jew back into his land, his homeland, and to establish him again upon the stage of the world as a people representative of himself. Having done that by consequence of the failed Russo-Arab IU invasion, why will he at this juncture allow a judgment and demolition exercise of his own making to destroy their city, the capital of their nation, rather than offer it shelter and protection? The rationale undergirding God's action here is really quite simple. First and foremost, the city's own prevailing rebel state makes it a virtual spiritual Sodom and Egypt, see 11:15. By virtue of the double cross perpetrated by the beast in the middle of this seven-year period, in which he will violate and desecrate the peace accord established between himself and the Jews, at the beginning of this period, the Jews are, for the most part, now on the run and/or fighting for their lives. Again, this is where Revelation 12:13-17 will have taken place. Many of the Jews will have been evacuated to Petra, barely escaping Satan's military assault. Some will have remained, perhaps in vain, in hope of retaking the city. In addition, the accord itself will be a violation of God's intended purpose for the Jewish state and a manifestation of their continuing lack of faith and trust in Him. The beast at this time will actually have taken over the holy city and its temple, and having put a stop to the daily sacrifice, will have stood up in it declaring that he is God. Thus the Jews will be no longer in control of either Jerusalem or all the vast crude and natural gas resources ceded to them by the hand of their God following the defeat of the Russians and the Arabs, as rather the beast is. Herein then lies the best explanation for the eastern kings and their march toward Jerusalem. They are not coming so much to attack the Jews, or to fight against a God in whom they most likely do not believe, as much as they are to battle the beast for control of that which they are in dire need, if they are to survive, and to prevent his ever reasserting himself, thereby dominating the world again. It does not appear that there will be any real concern for any possible run-in with God on their minds, even though God's country is clearly their destination. Thus, the Jews' prevailing rebel state of mind aside for the moment, the great city will in all likelihood be attacked primarily because of the presence of the beast, who will have made it his new headquarters, probably in place of Rome, which will soon be destroyed, although he, the beast, may not know it. Italy and Rome, completely destroyed, verse 19 BC, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Also, during this time of devastation, great Babylon, the great city, 14:8, the woman of chapter 17, having the inscription upon her forehead, but already reduced to only her political entity, will be remembered and revisited by God, so that she too will be forced to drink from the cup containing the wine of the fierceness of his anger. Again, this reference could only pertain to Rome, Italy. Up to this time, of course, Rome will be the seat of the throne of the beast, who will have made his peace with the Jews, broken that peace, and then committed himself to their destruction. 12:1-17. Being the peninsula that it is, without question all of that portion surrounded by water will be flooded, so that Rome, the beast's base of operation and his headquarters, which sits on the very edge of the Mediterranean, will ultimately be toppled by the earthquake accompanied by giant tidal waves. For in addition to general apostasy, it was she, the woman with the split personalities, who dealt the final death nail to the early church, slaughtering multitudes who called themselves Christians, both in her political persona as a secular entity under her Caesars, then as a Rome-based religious institution, the Great Whore, led by the popes, and it was Rome's Catholic crusaders and Inquisitionists, together with their popes, who made it a point and their business to annihilate any and all Jews who refused to bow the knee to her demands and theological persuasion. God has not forgotten, he will not forget, nor will he forgive. That old Roman religious institution, the Great Whore, chapter 17:1, alter ego of the woman on the beast, is now and has been since 1929 ensconced in a modern entity within the city of Rome itself, identified and accepted as a separate nation by all the nations of the world, having its own government and the smallest army in the world, known as the Vatican. From there, it exercises considerable influence on both the religious and political fronts, although, perhaps, less than it would like. As detailed and shown in chapter 17, she will suffer a similar but separate fate, instigated by God, albeit executed by the hands of men, the very men who should have given her support. The beast with his 10-nation confederacy will destroy the Vatican at the beginning of his reign. Physical political Babylon here, however, will be demolished to the supreme delight of, and personally by the hand of, the Almighty himself, just prior to the final Christ-led phase of Armageddon, during the earthquake, so-called commercial Babylon the Great, per chapter 18, will be brought down before the apocalypse begins, as we shall see. Thereby the beast will be deprived of his normal base of operation, and of a place to which to retreat, either from the Chinese or from his heavenly advance. Thus, with his escape route, having been foiled by the greatest, most massive of all earthquakes, seaports, airports, and their runways will doubtless all be completely destroyed, and therefore useless. He will have no choice but to stay and face the music of his Maker, the Messiah, at his advent in his homeland. Furthermore, this, shall we say, Babylonic fall will be the last of two mentioned here in the Revelation. There was no weeping and wailing at Rome's fall in around 476 or so A.D. There will be no cause for weeping and wailing at her complete destruction in the future. Few, if any, outsiders are likely to have cried during the fall of actual Babylon to the Medes and the Persians, for obvious reasons, given that international relations in those days tended to be rooted in tyranny, governed and regulated with cruelty off the tip of a sword. All economies, including hers, will be in shambles by this time. No one will miss her. Hence, being a play on words, so to speak, this is not Babylon the Great of Chapter 18. Rather, it is the same as Chapter 17, the woman with that inscription on her forehead, already shown to be Rome, on account of her great whore persona. Whatever the similarity of names, context says they are different entities. Island nations, all destroyed. Verse 20, and every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. A third and final consequence of this worldwide earthquake will be, as with the Indian Ocean event of 2004 and the 2011 Fukushima, Japan incident, widespread, complete destruction of those bodies of land completely or partially surrounded by water. Landslides, avalanches, together with mega tsunamis, will totally rearrange the landscape of coastal areas. Not only will the mountains on all the islands disappear from sight, knocked down by the earthquake, but these islands will be completely submerged as well, destroyed by the monstrous killer tidal waves that will be generated. That any such flooding will not be global, however, and therefore will not affect the inland segment of larger land masses is evident from all that is to follow. On the other hand, coastlines and all port cities will, without a doubt, be completely demolished, making any possibility of renewed international commerce impossible. They will not recover. Needless to say, this is, on the other hand, quite in keeping with God's promise in Genesis, where He promised to never destroy the world again by water. There will be no Ark of 2012 fame, the movie. Mankind will not be able to deliver and shelter himself from the wrath of his Maker, the true destroyer of our world. There will be no escape, and no one will come to rescue, no super Autobot. Neutrinos will not be the culprit behind freak interactions with normal particles of nature, causing earth-shattering mishaps worldwide. He will not initiate, nor will he supervise the rebuilding process when the drama stops. Moreover, as harrying and horrifying an ordeal as this will be, it is not in fact designed to kill the remainder of the human race, though all exposed thereto will be avowed enemies of God. They will never willingly bow the knee to Him. Rather, although massive loss of life is probable, the chief objective is to generate a fear and a trembling unparalleled, to the point of heart failure, as men with insurmountable anguish of mind and soul behold firsthand the awesome, unstoppable power of nature unbridled and weaponized against them. There will be no way of escape, nowhere to hide, and no place to which to run for shelter from the wrath of this angry God. Sidebar: Mega Tsunami. While the movie 2012 depiction is probably a bit far-fetched, insofar as its depiction of the whole world being destroyed by earthquake-generated flood, it may no less be a fair representation of what will occur during these traumatic final moments of human history as we know it. Researchers now tell us that not only do movements in the Earth's tectonic plates, up or down, create dangerous and deadly walls of rushing water deep under the ocean and large lakes, but the quaking of the Earth, such as will occur here, will also trigger killer landslides. These landslides do double duty as they first pull down the entire sides of mountains, rearranging the landscape in the process. Those slides that dump themselves violently into large bodies of water can in turn churn enormous killer waves of death and destruction known as the so-called mega tsunami, having colossal walls that can be thousands of feet high, towering over skyscrapers. They can be spun by slides of mud and dirt or by slides of snow and of glacier ice, and they can push waves up to 10 times bigger than their sister waves caused by earthquakes, or between 1,600 and 1,800 feet high. In 1958, July 9th, according to a BBC report on YouTube titled BBC Nature, Mega Tsunami, Alaskan Superwave, Amazing Survival, Sonny Ulrich and his 8-year-old son, Howard, got a first-hand experience of just such an occurrence. On this fateful morning, when an estimated 19 million tons of rock slammed into Alaska's Lituya Bay, their boat was picked up by an unexpected, unprecedentedly large wave, swept inland over the treetops, before being brought back and set down again in the lake, where two other boats had not fared so well. They were swept out and smashed at sea, never to be seen again. Scientists are said to have observed the aftermath of a similar event only 5 years earlier in 1953 that left them baffled, as there were then no eyewitness accounts of what they could see plainly had occurred. A natural force of this nature had been previously unknown and therefore not understood. There were no records of any such event. In addition, they fully expect now that one day a densely populated east coast of 40 million people along with the entire coast of the U.S. could and will be devastated by mega waves of this sort. Why only the east coast is not clear. Hailstorm, horrendous. Verse 21. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. Rounding out God's expressions of sore displeasure, in a fitting finale to the bowl judgments, man will receive a thunderous pounding from or by a storm ranking somewhere in the extreme. It will be immense in scope, raining hailstones or icy chunks weighing as much as 100 pounds. For all of this, the hardened hearts of men will not be softened. None will repent, as rather, they will persist in blaspheming his holy name, knowing that only he is the cause, in the face of whom their beast God can bring them no solace. Okay, my friends, we will end today's lesson in this edition of the Bible Prophecy Masterclass podcast right here. Make plans, won't you, to be with us next time as we will embark upon the first of the last three of our discussions of the beast and his kingdom in show number 19, episode number 43 in our series. That study will be rooted primarily in Revelation chapters 19, the return of Jesus Christ, his face off with the beast at the Battle of Armageddon. Please be sure to inform others about this timely and very necessary study of the book of the Revelation of Jesus Christ. We pray God will richly bless you until our next time together.